and welcome to The Swiss Connection. I'm Susan Masika. If you use social media, chances are you've seen a crowdfunding campaign before. Maybe you've even contributed to one. Maybe it was a GoFundMe page to invite contributions for a sick family member in need, or a Kickstarter campaign to help open a local cafe. But if you're not familiar with crowdfunding, the basic idea is that through online platforms like these, many members of the public can give money, even in small amounts, to projects that they care about, whether it's a social cause, an arts festival, or a small business. Often, supporters receive a small, non-monetary gift in return, like a concert ticket or a personal tour of a startup. In the last few years, crowdfunding has also become an increasingly popular channel for supporting something a little bit different: scientific research. Science crowdfunding is raising a lot of questions, not just about how research is funded, but about how science is communicated, liked, and shared online. My colleague, Celia Lutterbacher, went to the Crowdfunding Science Festival in Zurich to learn more about how this phenomenon has exploded in the age of social media, and how the way we think about and talk about science is changing.
Before we begin, I have a hypothetical question for you listeners. Imagine you've been given 100 Swiss francs, and you've been told that you must use the money to fund one of two science projects that would otherwise not be able to go forward without your support. The researchers behind the first campaign need some lab equipment to grow and study the bacteria E. coli, which is naturally found in the human digestive tract, but some strains of which can also cause illness. The second project wants to raise money for a team of scientists to travel to China to study giant pandas in their native habitat. Of these two projects, which do you think you might be more likely to support with your 100 Swiss francs?
Now just hold that thought for a moment. We'll come back to the microbes and pandas in a little bit. Celia, can you tell me a bit more about the crowdfunding science festival that you went to recently in Zurich?
Sure. There were about 250 people who came to the festival, which was held at the Kunsthalle, Zurich's contemporary art museum. And the purpose of the event was twofold. First, it was to celebrate nearly 2 years since the launch of Switzerland's very first science crowdfunding platform, Science Booster, which is part of a larger general interest crowdfunding platform called We Make It. Science Booster has hosted 40 crowdfunding campaigns since it was launched in January 2017, of which 31 met their funding goals. So the festival was both a chance to celebrate that success and look to the future of crowdfunding in Switzerland. Second, the festival also featured some expert speakers who came to talk about how online and social media, which gave rise to the crowdfunding phenomenon in the first place, are changing the world of science.
And obviously, the global trend is that younger adults are using social media.
That was University of Wisconsin-Madison professor of life sciences communication, Dominique Brossard. She is one of the world's leading science communication experts, and she told the festival audience about the latest trends in social media use worldwide, as well as in Switzerland. According to Brossard, today, scientists have more opportunities than ever to communicate about their research with each other and with the public, especially through online channels like Reddit, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. At the same time, lack of trust and concerns over privacy are driving many users away from social networks like Facebook and toward messaging platforms like WhatsApp. To access news, many people are even starting to go back to online versions of more traditional media channels like radio, TV, and newspapers. But Brossard said this reversal isn't a trend yet seen in Switzerland. YouTube, LinkedIn, WhatsApp, and Facebook Messenger are growing sources of news for the Swiss, and Facebook is still the platform of choice when it comes to overall social media use.
This is good news for us that are interested in science communication, because it means that people get actually acquainted with something they would have never seen before, and potentially increasing the likelihood to reaching this kind of audiences.
Okay, all this is interesting, but what does it mean for science?
Basically, with so many people using the internet and social networks today, there's a much greater chance of encountering what Brossard calls iffy science stories. The problem with those is that it can be hard to tell what's intentionally false, fake news, and what's simply bad reporting, which can happen when journalists oversimplify or exaggerate scientific results to create clickable headlines. And misleading science stories often get shared a lot, not only because they reinforce social media users' worldviews, but because they can actually inspire hope.
So one example of that could be those viral headlines you sometimes see that claim a certain food can cure cancer, right?
Exactly.
Okay, I see. But what does all this have to do with crowdfunding?
That's a good question. To find out, I spoke to Mike Schaefer, a professor of science, crisis, and risk communication at the University of Zurich. He was another speaker at the Crowdfunding Science Festival, and in his talk, he told the audience that crowdfunding is an interesting science communication test case because it requires researchers to present their ideas publicly, usually online, at a very early stage. They have to work out how to communicate their ideas or their research project in a way that's engaging enough to actually motivate people to donate their money to it. He also said that the internet and social media are creating totally new interfaces between science and society. Thanks to blogs and forums, smartphone apps, live streams, and social networks, non-scientists today can observe science as it's being done and discuss it with the researchers themselves.
And do these communication channels let the public participate in science too?
Yes, they can participate in informal peer review by calling out shoddy science or plagiarism. But they can even be scientists themselves through so-called citizen science projects, where members of the public collect and share data by identifying migrating birds or classifying distant galaxies, for example. But Schaefer told me that when it comes to attracting citizen support for science projects through crowdfunding, social media, the clicks, the shares, the likes, adds another wrinkle. And this takes us back to the microbes and the panda bears we talked about earlier.
Critics or skeptics of crowdfunding emphasize essentially quality control and the lack of peer review in crowdfunded science. And it was very nicely encapsulated in the term panda bear science in the medical journal The Lancet, where they said, well, the danger is that the seemingly boring and dry and abstract basic research is not being funded anymore if the crowd is to decide what gets money. And what will be funded then is panda bear science, a science that has to do with sexy, cuddly animals and that is attractive in a way that panda bears are, but that doesn't necessarily have to have a scientific substance.
In his research, Schaefer has found that crowdfunding campaigns are more likely to be successful if the researchers behind them interact with donors a lot and present their projects in a visual and entertaining way, regardless of the science itself. So this raises the question of whether crowdfunding could be biased towards so-called panda bear science, as the Lancet article put it, leaving campaign goals to fund less cool-sounding research unmet.
Celia, can we talk here about the benefits and challenges of opening up that choice of what research gets funded and what doesn't to the public?
So this is what's known in the science communication research field as the democratization of science. And let's let Mike Schaefer explain how science crowdfunding proponents define it.
The bigger argument of the proponents is that, well, it's democratizing science. The traditional system of science funding is seen as flawed by many of them. It favors experienced scientists and longer projects and not the really innovative ideas, but kind of the mainstream ideas that are on vogue at this time and space. So crowdfunding democratizes science funding, meaning that finally the people can fund what they think is fundable and should be funded and should be done in terms of research.
For the organizers of the Crowdfunding Science Festival, despite the potential pitfalls, this interaction of the public with science and with scientists that Schaefer is talking about is a major benefit of the crowdfunding model.
Crowdfunding, especially applied to science, is a strong exercise in communication. So the big difficulty is to break down your science to make it understandable. So if you talk about quantum physics, of course, it's very difficult, I guess, to communicate. So it's a challenge. And this is the great potential. If you manage to do it, you reach people. This is also a pitfall. Like for science journalism and communication, it can also be oversimplified. It can even go into telling things that are slightly wrong. This we want to avoid. We see our platform a possibility for scientists to communicate to the broader audience and as well as for people to read about science and as well for journalists to get new stories and new ideas.
That was Crowdfunding Science Festival organizer and Science Booster co-founder Mirko Bischofberger. Now, Celia, you also spoke to his fellow organizer and co-founder, Luc Henry, who said that the science communication aspect of crowdfunding is just as important as, if not more so, than the money itself.
Yes, he told me that when he helps scientists organize their science booster campaigns, he always tells them that crowdfunding is not so much about the funding itself, it's about public engagement.
Switzerland is a very wealthy country when it comes to science, and also most of the scientific projects require a funding that goes beyond the 10 or even 50,000 Swiss francs that you can raise through crowdfunding. So we're not there to replace or disrupt the science funding environment. I think we're really here to say, okay, there is a niche, or there are a series of niches. One is the academic researcher who wants to create a community around a project, and crowdfunding is a really interesting way to do this, engage people in a one-to-one relationship through the rewards, through then the fact that they have a contact with every donor. The other niche is really the person, science curious, outside the academia, who doesn't have an obvious place to go and look for funding, this high school student who need a couple of thousands for his, you know, final study work, the amateur ornithologist who need a little bit of material.
Isabel Klessmann, head of the University of Zurich Zoological Museum, was one attendee I spoke with at the festival. Klessmann's interested in using crowdfunding to raise money for the museum's special exhibitions, and she says that these kinds of personal connections are very important to her.
Crowdfunding is also interesting to get people on board who are also interested in the subject and also give money because they think the theme is interesting. And that's something that I want to also get people who are emotionally interested in the subject and therefore would like to fund it.
So where does all this leave us in terms of the future of science and communication?
Well, for Dominique Brossard, the freedom to communicate about and participate in science that the internet brings means that scientists, research institutions, journalists, and the public all share a responsibility to avoid spreading iffy science stories.
And what about the panda bears?
Brossard says that you don't have to study cuddly animals to make your research interesting.
To some extent, all science could be super interesting and exciting and so on, but unfortunately, most scientists haven't been trained to think that way, that there needs to be some effort to actually relate to what people think when you talk to them about your science, and that it's up to you, the research, to actually make it sexy, and that sexy doesn't mean always bad. So, you know, like there's one thing about trying to make your findings, you know, not reflect what your study was about, but to actually communicate the excitement you have for your research actually very often will make people excited. So it doesn't have, the science doesn't have to be exciting, but if you have a video of a scientist super excited about what they're talking about, you know, it's contagious.
So it's not just about panda bears.
Exactly. It's not about panda bears. I mean, I think it's like a communication 101. Don't assume you know what people will think. So, you know, like, it's just, oh, you think nuclear physics is boring, but why do you think so? Who told you so? It depends what story you tell about that.
To read more about the festival in Zurich and about the science crowdfunding phenomenon in Switzerland, visit us at swissinfo.ch. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Donnie Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika.